I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 436. What more is there to say about destiny?
Don't worry, we'll tell you.
Gadget and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I am Pandalicious.
Welcome to another episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing phenomenal. You know, we got a long weekend. We got, like, good weather, finally, in Massachusetts. Like, I forgot for a hot minute what the sun looks like.
Right on time for holidays.
Like, it's just, it's so good. And it's, like, iced coffee season, so I'm on, like, cloud nine. Plus, I got more Destiny. Like, ah!
You are very happy about that,
It's Destiny. A good time. I am so... You don't even know, but
I
will know.
I don't need to know those...
Yeah, you do, because you need to play with me. But we'll talk about that later in the podcast.
Of course.
I'm gonna make you play with me. And here's the thing, though. You're actually gonna enjoy it.
Haven't disliked Destiny.
I know, but the things that you and I have talked about, you're like, it'd be so much better if they did this. They finally did it.
Oh, good. I'm glad they finally listened to me.
Yeah, they did.
All the angry emails finally paid off.
Legit, they listened to you hard. But we'll get there. We'll get there. Don't you worry. We'll get there.
It will take up most of our show.
No, maybe.
Yes.
Let me not lie, probably. But it'll be a fun conversation.
Okay.
But I want to jump in with anime, because we've been leading with, like, E3 and game stuff for the last couple of weeks. Not that those are bad things, because, I mean, the hype train is rolling.
Choo-choo!
Okay? Like, the internet is abuzz, basically calling out and saying, okay, one thing for sure that Bethesda's talking about is Fallout. You know it's going to happen. Okay, like, it's so interesting to me to see, like, how many people are losing their minds and, like, sending around the character art and just feeling like, I'm trolling you so hard right now. Troll-o-lo-lo-lo-lo. My social feeds are full of very, very hysterical people, which I appreciate. So it's really interesting to me to see just, like, how much the hype train is building now. You know, you've got both Harmonix and Activision with music games coming out this year. So you know that Activision is going to do some shit at E3 around music. And the last time that they had a music game, they put on a concert. So, Lord knows it's going to happen there. And I might even go, like, a little hands-on, if possible, with Guitar Hero Live at E3. And then share my honest opinion, as I often do.
No, boy.
About it. I mean, here's... Look.
Words.
Look. It's what we're founded on. When I really enjoy something, I really enjoy it, and I tell you that I really enjoy it. If I don't really enjoy it, I tell you that I don't really enjoy it, but I tell you why I don't really enjoy it. And if I have any ideas for what they could do to make me enjoy it, I don't just shit all over something just to shit all over it. Because that's rude and not cool. That's not helpful to any of our listeners, and it's not helpful to me, because it makes me just sound like a douche. And one thing Ninja Sister is not is a douche.
I'm the douche.
You're the douche.
I'm the douche.
I'm just going to rename you on the podcast. It's Ninja Sister and the douche.
Oh.
Aww.
Pretty bad, actually.
It's funny, though. So, yes. With that, let's talk about some anime. Because I've been watching some. I know you've been watching some. I actually started and I marathoned through on Funimation, a series that we had heard about a while back. And KBD, even King Baby Duck over at B3Crew.com, did a review of it where he put it up on a pretty high pedestal. And you know me, usually when KBD says something is good, I'm pretty much on it. Unless it's definitely etchy, and then I know it's on a high pedestal for different reasons for him than for me.
Right.
But nevertheless, I decided to check out Death Parade, which is currently streaming on Funimation. It's also available on Hulu. It is one of the few that's actually not on Crunchyroll. And I think that just has to do with the fact that Funimation is the official distributor of the title in the US. And so sometimes when they have initial exclusivity, it ends up on their services first, which they have a very tight deal with Hulu. And that's why it's not on Crunchyroll. But I have a feeling that at some point it will be on Crunchyroll. That being said, Death Parade is dark, but in a good way. It is definitely very interesting. So,
is it dark like Another meets like Paradise Kiss meets like Hellgirl?
I would say that it is very much on the Hellgirl side with like a touch of Another. So where Another,
like, the anime style kind of reminds me of Paradise Kiss, which was not necessarily like horror. It was more just a slice of life.
Yeah.
But it also kind of had that animation feel, kind of like Clamp.
Yeah.
So like it has like that long, elegant, flowy type of like, and it feels kind of familiar.
Yes,
like
definitely
the shots I've seen.
Yeah. It should. I would say that is a very, very accurate.
I miss Clamp.
Clamp is, oh man.
I miss Clamp so hard.
But it's one of those things that, like, for me, you know that there are certain anime series, if you're a big anime fan, that when you start watching a new series, when you see who is behind it between the publisher and the producer, there are just certain open credits when you see them, you're like, oh, this is going to be good.
Yes.
So I have that with Kadokawa, and I have that with Genion. Like, every time I see something start with either the Kadokawa logo or the Genion logo, I'm like, okay, I'm going to like this. I'm going to like it. Like, I don't even need to, like, read the synopsis. I know that pretty much I'm going to like this. So, as I recall, this is a Genion piece.
Okay.
So, that was, like, the first piece of, yeah, this going to be good. This going to be good. So, the way that Death Parade is set up is it starts with two people. And they're a couple in some way. They're not always a romantic couple, but they always come in pairs into this bar with this guy named Denim, who's the bartender, who is always making a drink and invites them in. And what happens is these people have no idea how they got to the bar, why they're there. Most of them are usually pretty anxious, because if you all of a sudden just ended up in an elevator and opened up into a bar and you have no recollection of how you even got to that building or where you are,
you'd be kind of concerned.
Exactly. And so Denim offers them a seat, always makes them a drink, and invites them to play a game and lets them know that they're playing a game and what's at stake is their life. And they have plenty of time to opt in and choose when they're going to play the game, but they can't leave the space until they play the game.
Okay.
So it already sets up this very emotionally charged environment between how they got there and all this kind of stuff.
So let me, from what you've just said, I want to try to make an educated guess.
Okay.
I feel like this bar is like purgatory.
Kinda.
And these people just showing up, I feel like they have, or they're on that edge of dying.
Okay.
And they don't, like you said, they don't recall how they got there. They don't remember the incident that has led them to this point. Whether they are linked together or they're two different instances, maybe they happen at the same time, which is why they show up at the same time. Like, I feel like they're
very,
playing,
very astute, Panda. You're so close.
Like,
so close. You got, like, a bunch of facts, like, really right.
Like, and I kind of feel like the bartender, like, if I had to guess what his appearance looks like, and I mean, I've seen stills of, like, the bar, but I don't think he's ever been in it.
Uh-huh.
Or it might have been, like, a side shot. I imagine that he's probably got, like, a deadpan face.
Yep.
And possibly silver or white hair?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, yep. Decim. of course. Decim is an arbiter.
Okay.
And so as they dig down into the story, what happens is when two people die at the same time in the world, they basically come before the arbiter or arbiters, because there's multiple arbiters, and the arbiters read through their memories and determine who basically is reincarnated and whose soul goes into the void. And the way that they have to arbitrate this is that they have to figure out really and truly what the darkness is in someone's soul, because they're really the determination of whether or not that darkness then returns to the world or gets thrown to the void. Or goes to the
void where it can do no...
Correct. And the void is not hell. They make sure to stress that it's not hell. The void is nothingness. So,
which should be far more scarier than hell.
Correct. The void is nothingness. That soul will never return and be reborn. It is just gone forever and ever. And basically, in one episode, they're like, if you go into the void, you have the sense of falling with no end ever for eternity. That's what the void is. There's no space. There's no color. It's just the sensation of falling forever and ever.
That would be terrifying, especially for someone who doesn't like the idea of falling.
It is. And so there are these two elevators at the back of the building. And so one soul is always reincarnated and one soul always goes to the void. Arbiters have these amazing eyes. Their eyes look completely different than normal people in that they have almost like an old stone cross. Ooh. Pattern in their eye. And so when they receive memories of the people that are coming for arbitration, they basically come in a blur. So it's very difficult for an arbiter, just based off of the memories that they get from people, to be able to determine the darkness in their soul. So they make them play a game to what the people believe is their death in order to basically discern someone's true nature, to have it unfold before them. At that point, they make the final determination of who goes and is reincarnated, and who ends up in the void.
Ooh, that is a dangerous game.
It is. And so everybody that comes in, like you said, has died. Some of them have died directly related to each other. I think the first episode is a couple that is on their honeymoon, and there's a car accident, and they die. And there's always party games that they're forced to play, but they're demonic party games. So, like, the first one is they're always named after the game they have to play. It's Seven of Darts. And so it's a dart game, and they get a dart board. And so the couple ultimately ends up saying that they're going to play. And they're a really cute couple. And as they play the game, initially, there's, like, no harm that's happening to them or things like that. And they start slowly having some flashbacks of memories come back to them. And they start realizing things. So in this first episode...
relationship leading up to their marriage, because you said honeymoon, so right. They're newly married.
For these guys, it's really everyone is always gaining memories up until why they died, because death is so traumatic, the soul is in shock, it basically wipes out everything that happened before. And so as they start going through the game and they get more relaxed, memories start coming in. Once a few memories start coming in, the game changes and becomes much more about the reminder of this is to the death, and that's where, basically, all of a sudden, as our mama would say, are we people competing? Show their asses.
Yep.
And so, as you're going along with this couple, they're, like, getting ready to play the game, and they realize, after they throw the first dart, that their opponent feels the pain. And so they finally look at the dartboard and realize that it's all the organs and tissue of the other player on their dartboard. So they're trying to win, because Decim says, you know, we will choose a winner at the end of the game. Never saying that the winner will live or die, even though they stated this is a game to the death, just that a winner will be decided. And so because they love each other, after like the first two pain things happen, they're like, oh, well, we can just throw our darts and we'll miss the board. And that way neither one of us will have any pain. And the husband's like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And then Decim reminds them that, okay, you guys can absolutely do that. But if you do that, if you look at the scores right now, that means that the wife will win. And the husband's like, I'm okay with that. And you see him have like this serene moment of, because I love her and that's what I want for her. And then all of a sudden he has a flashback, And it's a flashback to their wedding day, overhearing people, women in the bathroom talking about their friend Mackie, which he assumes is their nickname for his wife,
right,
Mackenzie, or whatever her name is, and how she snagged a doctor. He's a doctor. And life is just going to be so sweet because she's got the money. And, you know, the only thing that's really bad is that she's going to finally give up her piece on the side that she's had for the last year. So he believes that his wife is cheating on him. Still goes through with the marriage because he really wanted her. But starts remembering, like, different times that she was crying in bed when they were together and he couldn't console her, or her phone was ringing and she wouldn't answer it in front of him. And so he makes it up in his mind that
it's true.
It's true, and she's cheated on him. So then he starts going, you know what, I'm not going to die for you because you're a lying-ass bitch, and, like, starts throwing darts to, like, try and win. And he hits on the side, and she falls to her legs, and she's like, look, do whatever you want to do, but just don't hit me in the belly. And, like, he looks at her, and she's like, because of your child. And he's like, wait, what? Like, I'm finally going to be a father. And he starts having warm fuzzies again. But then his brain hits him with, like, it's probably not yours because you've been cheating on this dude with for, like, a year. And so he, like, won't believe it.
Oh,
and so she's
God.
Like, yeah. They, so, like, they
love it already.
Yeah. So they really start, like, going through. And it's just, like, this whole dissemination of their relationship for the back end of the episode. And you're sitting there looking at these memories trying to figure out, like, is she in earnest? Did she cheat? Did she not cheat?
Is it true? Is this just trying to show who's got, like, every person has darkness. Like, there is no absolutely pure person in this world. But, like, this is a good way to truly validate, or, you know, be able to evaluate.
Well, you know, when someone's life is on the line, basically you will learn the limits to which they'll go to save themselves, and which the series down the road later explores whether or not that's really a true discernment and way to judge somebody, because when anybody is faced with something traumatic, they will absolutely go to the wall, and the wall is always going to be probably something dark when their life is at stake. So is that really a fair judgment of someone's character and their soul when you're setting up and rigging a game? Right? Because the arbiters have a control where they can basically shift the balance. So if somebody's, like, winning really well, they can basically change the game to make it so that the other person is winning, so they can cause a traumatic effect to draw it out even more.
Right.
So we'll get there.
Because this person has to pass judgment.
Correct. And so,
if they're not,
like,
enough curves, then you're not going to see all ends of the humanity, the light and the dark, to be able to make that proper decision.
So you get to the end, basically, of this game where, like, the wife is just slightly behind, and she's just like, look, I'm telling you right now, I do have a friend, and you need to know this, that her name is, and she says what her name is, and she always hated the fact that her name was so long and kind of masculine, so we always just called her Mackie, and she is a money-grubbing so-and-so, and all that kind of stuff. I told you that she was at the wedding, and I didn't really want her to be, but she was in my group of friends, so I couldn't really ignore it, but I can't believe that you think that I would cheat on you for a year, and that you would have any doubts that this thing is anything other than yours. And so he starts, like, the husband starts having, like, a moment of recollection of, like, maybe that's true, and maybe I am going to be a dad. And so she goes to throw his last arrow, and that thing in the pit of his stomach, like, goes off and goes, but what is it? What if it's not? And so he goes and tries to interrupt her throwing her dart, hoping that the dart isn't going to hit the board and he's going to win. The problem is that he basically, because she was aiming to not hit the board at all, his interjection
made her hit it.
Yep, and made her hit it in the eye on a double. So, like, he just crumbles to the ground, blood spewing out of his mouth. Like, he's in a ridiculous amount of pain. And then Destin's like, all right, so she is one. And his final dart had gone into her abdomen, even though she begged him not to do it.
She's going to be reincarnated for one.
No. Listen.
Oh.
See, this is why you need to watch this.
Oh, this is so good.
So we get to the thing, and, like, he loses his shit because he's lost the game. Like, he's not going to be a father because at this point she's like, so when exactly did we die and how did we die? And Desim's like, oh, okay, so you remembered. So basically they were in a car driving to their honeymoon, and her phone rings, and she's like, no, I don't want to take that call right now. Like, I'm enjoying our honeymoon, because she had been planning to tell on the honeymoon her husband that she was pregnant. And he, like, loses it. He's like, well, I want to see your phone. I want to see your phone. So he's fighting with her to try and get the phone, not paying attention to the road. Careens off the cliff. That's how they die. So he starts losing his shit because he's taken in that there's this possibility that his wife was not cheating on him. It was his own insecurity. And now
he has not only killed himself, but he's also killed their future.
Exactly. And their child, because he always wanted a child. And she starts crying and bawling her eyes out. And you see that there's this moment of recognition because Desim has asked them to start walking to the elevators. And she realized, like, he's got snot flying out of his face. He's, like, twisting and cavorting and just, like, all these things. And so she has this moment of recognition. Conciliation. And depending upon how you really want to view the episode, the way that I took it is that she really truly loves her husband, so she flips. She has this moment of recognition, and then she plays into his worst fears and basically false confesses that, of course, the baby isn't his, and she's trying to be as convincing as possible, and that she cheated on him because she doesn't want him to have to spend the eternity of the void knowing that he killed her and their child.
Wow.
So she takes the hit and goes to the void, and he's reincarnated.
But if now what's his name? The arbiter?
Yep.
So if it's his decision, who goes and who gets reincarnated?
Yep.
Couldn't he have intervened then and been like, oh, I see you're trying to be self-sacrificing?
He didn't see it because her back, when she has the moment of reconciliation, her back is to Desim because the guy is still on the grind. She's heading towards the elevators.
Oh, okay.
And she knows, because she didn't do any of these things, that her husband believes that she's going to get reincarnated. And she, knowing what the void is going to be, because Desim describes what it is, doesn't want that to happen for him. Now, while all this is going on, there's an onlooker who later we learn is recruited to be Desim's assistant. So she ends up working in the bar.
Now let me guess.
Okay.
I feel like you said, like, people who show up here are already dead.
Yep.
So maybe this is some kind of
Kurakami
spirit of some kind?
No,
or just someone
died.
Who's very aligned to death?
No, let me tell you. So she died.
Okay.
And she came before Desim, and Desim was unable to judge her. He was
really?
Unable to, yeah, he was oh. unable to clearly get through all of her memories.
Oh.
And
I bet that's going to play into the plot somewhere.
And so his boss, Nona, who's basically this tsundere looking little child looking person.
Is she blonde?
No, she's got white hair too, but she has purple eyes. Desim has blue eyes. Or her eyes red. I can't remember. They're all different colors. Every arbiter has a different color eye. But okay. They all have that heavy stone cross in their eye. Except for Kurakami. She was human. She died. Desim could not judge her fairly. And so because of that, she wasn't able to keep any of her memories. But he didn't want to send someone to the void without being able to really, truly
judge
their soul. So Nona pulled some strings and said, okay, well, we'll keep her around for a while until you can figure it out. We'll wipe her memories and we'll hold them. And she can just be your assistant here because you probably need some help. So it's Kurakami, after he sentences everyone,
The couple and whatever.
Yep. They have a powwow with Nona, who's basically the boss of all of the arbiters. And she goes to Kurakami, so what do you think? And she's like, I'm sorry, but he got that wrong. And the look on Desim's face is like, what are you talking about? I got that wrong. You heard her confess. She goes, yeah, that was a confession out of love. She did not want him to suffer for all eternity thinking that he killed their unborn child. And so you can't just judge people on by what they say, because they're deceptive little creatures and all that kind of stuff. And you made the wrong decision. And there's no going back. It's not like you can recall a soul from the void or recall a soul from reincarnation. So she went to the void, and that was all on Desim. And Desim turns to Nona and is like, did I get that wrong? And like Nona slaps on the back of the head. She goes, I told you not just to go on what the words are. You have to pay attention to all things, not just the memories, but how people act. And you have to learn to understand that. Ugh, God, now make me a drink. And it's like, not even a, well, you fucked that up so you can't be an arbiter for like a week? Just, whoopsie, you sent us all to the void forever?
Obviously because, I mean, you have to have some, if you're going to have a series that is going to tap on such a heavy, heady subject that's highly philosophical like this, it would be kind of hard to make it believable to people who are watching it that whoever is passing the judgment is completely sound in all things.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of have to make him, even though he's not human himself, you have to give him a sliver of humanity to make it believable. You always have to leave that sliver of doubt, because that's where the conversation comes in for people who are watching it.
And Death Parade does that. Every episode gets more and more charged as you see couples.
It kind of reminds me of the vignettes from Hellgirl, because, you know, like,
again,
the first few, mm-hmm. Okay, it was morally, you could definitely see, all right, you were being bullied to the point that you wanted to kill yourself. I could see why you would want this avenged. But then later on, you started seeing some stories that the grievance was not strong enough for you as a person to feel it justified being swept into hell.
Yeah. And so that's why I was like,
stay on that humanity. So it sounds like Death Parade definitely has that in spades.
It does. It does. And so as new couples come in, I would say that they become much more charged and the games become much more silly. So it's a really good balance of like, how odd is it that you have this roulette wheel that goes off and you play a game of air hockey to the death? Or you're bowling to the death. And
do the games have some significance to the couples that play them? Does it seem like the games are somehow
for some couples it is. So there's a couple later on that are a younger couple. I would say that they're like in their mid-teens in high school. And the way that the game that they play comes into it was that one of them worked at a bowling alley and they were interested in each other. They didn't really know it. Truth surfaced about one of them while they were with a group of friends at a bowling alley, and so they're bowling. So sometimes the game does directly relate to, an instance of how they died, or something, or the tying bind between them. In other ones, it's completely unrelated. Like, you know, the darts game, you could go on the etheric end of things and say that the reason that, they were playing darts because it's a game of chance and hit or miss, and he was picking up pieces of conversation, the husband, that were hit or miss, or whether or not it was his wife, but that's really a stretch. It's a direct relation.
When you brought it up. Like, darts, yes, there's a certain amount of skill and there's a certain amount of chance, but it is a game that really requires you to stop and focus.
Yep.
So I feel like, and this is just my speculation because I didn't write the episode. I'm not an animation.
You need to marathon the whole series because it's right up your alley.
But I kind of feel like, you know, because they're getting little bits of each thing, like they're trying to build up that tension between each of the throws. And when certain things are being revealed and the cinematic, like I can imagine, because like you said, I haven't seen this episode, but I'm sure that like every time that like there has been a hit, there was obviously the recognition of pain on the partner, maybe then a flash to a memory or something. Yep. So like I can see how this could be all cinematically done to build up the tension between the lovers and stuff. And I mean, it does require you to be reading your partner, reading the room, and finding that quiet place to make that shot or not make that shot, as it may or may not be. It's a delicate dance. So, like, it's extremely elegant. Like, this whole first episode sounds excruciatingly elegant.
The whole series is that way. The way that they are set up, the whole series is that way. And the couples vary all over the place. There's a couple that's made out of basically a high school pop band.
Like an idol band?
Fangirl.
Okay.
And an idol band member. They get sent to the arbiter Genji, because like I said, there are multiple arbiters.
So you're not always with Decim.
Right. There's a couple episodes where Genji is the main arbiter, but it relates back to Decim. Decim and Kurikami are the main protagonists of the series, but Genji is a much less, like, I give no shit about humans. I'm just here to do the job because I got to do the job for whatever fucking reason. And
I'm sure that will play into the plot somehow, figuring out how these people got chosen to be arbiters and how they wound up doing this.
They end up playing a game of Twister to the death.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it's this really interesting juxtaposition of this really, really emotional situation. And, oh, by the way, to get out of it, you basically have to pay air hockey, Twister, bowling, darts. I'm forgetting one.
Like Parcheesi.
No. Risk. Nope.
No, I'm just,
I forget one. There's one more game in there. It is only a 12 episode arc. Okay. I don't know if they're going to do another series. I hope that they do. Because it's really good. I think
that the manga series is still ongoing.
Yeah, I'm sure that the manga is probably still running, and I probably ought to want to really check into that. And I can't believe I said that because, you know, it's very rare that an anime makes me want to check out the manga. But yep. This one definitely is high up on the list. So if you like things to be very emotionally charged and to err a little bit on the dark side, Death Parade is definitely a series that you want to check out. And like I said, it's on Funimation and it's also on Hulu. So
I'm going to marathon the F out of it.
Yeah, you really should.
Oh, I'm gonna.
So your shit.
I'm gonna.
So that's my anime.
And that was a very good piece.
Thanks.
Really good. I wish I were watching something new. Like, I keep looking at all the stuff that's available, and, like, I'm just not drawn to anything outside of the stuff that I'm now currently, like, actively simulcastingly watching.
And, well, like,
I tried to watch the Seven White Witches one that I know KBD had mentioned, like, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I don't think you'll enjoy it. Yeah.
And then I saw this one that had an interesting, like, it kind of almost had me, but then I was like, no, because apparently it was a collaboration between, like, a car company and a dev house, an anime dev house, and they wanted to make, like, you know, kind of like Strike Witches,
mm-hmm.
or that series that all the girls were guns, and I can't remember what the name of that was, but they were all super cute.
Yeah,
you didn't realize that they were actually like actual guns.
Yeah, it began with a T, didn't it?
I think so.
Yeah,
but
because it was a sound that the gun made.
Yeah. Like Batum or something, but well, yeah. Batum is the bomb one.
Yeah, that's the bomb one.
But it's something like that.
Yep.
And it made, yeah. Well, this one is like My Glorious Palisades or whatever, and it's all these girls, and they are like super dressed up, and they're all super cute, but they are like ships. They're all like boats.
Oh yeah. It is like Strike Witches, except yeah. They're like boats. Yeah.
Like,
And they're all fighting a war, but they're all older ships and boats.
But they're humanoid avatars, yes. Like young freaking girls.
Yes,
and it's like so. Yes. It's a weird subgenre that they're doing.
Yeah, no.
I mean, like, I kind of enjoyed the anime that I'm talking about where the girls were guns, because eventually, like, you started seeing that while it did get kind of fan service-y with, like, the guns really enjoying their handlers a little too much.
Uh-huh.
But then eventually they stopped really playing that up, and then it really came to them doing their jobs as firearms.
Right.
So then they got really technical and really serious, which I appreciated, because it made me go, oh, man, so an AK-47 can do that? Like, it made me think about guns.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that one actually did get into the detail behind it, whereas the ones that you're talking about that are, like, Strike Witches, there's a little bit of the history and some fact base on the type of ship.
Who's also, like, a freaking biplane.
Yes.
And my legs are chopped off and have freaking propellers on them. Like, yeah, that makes sense. Sure.
No. Yeah.
Sure it does.
Yeah, no. I will tell you right now something that you probably would enjoy would be Triage X. Which is currently running. It is, I would probably put it on the side of, like, a, I would say that's probably not as funny as Durarara. where
Tora took me a little bit. I'm not even gonna
It's also a little bit dark, but basically, well, it's more than a little bit dark, but basically the lead character is part of a group of people who follow this doctor, one of the reasons why it's called Triage X, and they're basically mercenaries that have been assembled to this doctor's decree, remove cancerous, tumorous things in the city because they basically have failed the city. So think of it as like a group of arrows.
Sounds like a anime version of a board game called Pandemic, where you are trying to keep the whole world germ free. And obviously, if you can't, the world gets overrun by disease and everybody dies.
Right. So basically, this doctor has determined various Yakuza members and bad politicians and whatnot to be cancerous to the city. And so they're triaged with, and they're given a black card. And that means they're to be assassinated. And so there's this group. Sorry, buddy.
Black card for you.
There's this group of people that they live normal day lives. A couple of the members attend high school like normal and participate in sports and things like that. But when they're called into triage and black card people,
it's time to die.
That's when their other set of abilities come out. And they basically kick a lot of ass, take a lot of names, a lot of people die. And so the main protagonist of the series is this guy that is carrying with him basically the soul of his best friend, because there was an explosion that went off, and he tried to protect his friend from the explosion with his body, because he really loved his best friend. And the doctor, the overseeing doctor, was actually his best friend's dad. And when they both came into the ER, he triaged them and determined that his son was damaged too much and wasn't going to live, but if he was able to harvest some of the organs that were still fine from his son, he could put them in this other boy who risked his life to save his son, and he could save him. So he was the first black card that ever happened, and so the guy basically carries the soul of his best friend. Like, he talks to him, and he talks back.
That's nice.
Yeah. And you don't really know if it's all in his head or, like, because half of his organs came from his friend, that maybe somehow, for some reason, he's still able to,
like... Gosh, we got, like, a little Frankenstein Tokyo Ghoul going on right now.
Yeah, yeah. But this kid is, like, amazingly badass. Like, crack shot, always deadpanned, and get shit did all the time. Because he's on a path to try and figure out really what he's about. So Triage X, you would absolutely enjoy. It's a little bit dark, but not to the level of like Death Parade.
So since you're bringing up doctors, there is a anime series that I have been like randomly going to when I want a palate cleanser, because it's one of those vignettes that's not, is it more than 4 minutes long?
Are you about to talk about the pandemic thingy? One?
I'm talking about, like, the psychosomatic.
Yeah, that's the one. I watched, like, the first episode, and they were talking, I think, about orgasms, and I was like, I don't know that I should watch this.
Erectile dysfunctions.
Yeah, and that's what it was.
The funny thing about the series, because, like, I did some research after the first episode, because the first time I watched it, I'm like, what just happened? And it really kind of reminded me of, like Western humor is completely structured differently than it is here. East comedy is completely different than what we find funny over here in the West. And, like, their stand-up sticks are far more calculated. They're really based on their language. And, like, puns are very well sculpted there. Like, we have very loose puns here that we kind of get. But, like, theirs are very strategically placed, which is why their humor is sometimes not seen are not felt from us, like, when we watch an
anime.
Because
it really, truly is a play on the language.
Yeah, it is.
And not the translation of the language. Exactly. I'm with you. Go for it.
So in that first episode where it's a doctor and a nurse, and the nurse is, I feel like she is the best comedic foil to this, because he's supposed to be the straight man in all this. So, like, he's trying to fully explain what erectile dysfunction is, how it can be caused, and she is butchering it not maliciously. Like, it's really just, I think, because of
no, where... it's a poke in the ribs, kind of.
It's a play on words, and I think it also plays into, like, what region of the country he's from versus where she's from. So when he says something like, oh, yeah, well, this happens in men around the ages of, you know, like... 18 to 35, and then when he says that, like, she jumps in with this quick banter about, it's like, yeah, and, like, you get red dots all over your face, and it's like, and, like, the comedy is so fast-paced, because this is only a 5-minute episode, so I think for us, you know, Americans, or anyone who's not from Japan, who sees these, finds the animation and, like, just how naive the character seems to be when she says these things to be funny. And then when you go back and you really kind of think about what she's saying, if you go back and actually, like, read, because there is, like, a manga of all these one-offs.
Oh, I didn't know there was a manga.
There is one. And a, like, novel-ish thing. Because after all the established vignettes happen, there is a plot going on. Because you end up meeting other doctors in the vignettes outside of this main male doctor and his nurse. And you meet a female nurse and, I mean, a female doctor and her nurse lady, who I think's kind of a robot. But, and their sticks are a little bit more funny because you've got two straight men, kind of, because the robot's very pan.
Mm-hmm.
Dead pan. So is the nurse. So there are these moments where, like, she's explaining something and then there's this big dot, dot, dot. And then the robot says something. So, like, the awkward silence between the breaks is what, physically for me, viewing it, I find more funny. And then I go back and I'm like, okay, now what was actually being said? Because there's three or four jokes going off at the exact same time, along with physical comedy and then visual comedy. So, like, they're bombarding you from all angles of all these things, hoping that one of them is going to get the laugh from you. So, I mean, if you are like me, who every once in a while you've watched something that's a little too much and, like, you really just want to fall through the holes of reality for a little bit, then this and Punchline are completely for you. There is no way that you can come off of having a horrible day watching either of these and still be in that horrible mood. There's just no way possible for that to happen. And, I mean... like I said, there is a plot that does happen a little bit later on, and you actually find out that all these doctors are at competing hospitals, per se. So, like, they're all trying to give the best information to win over potential clients to go to those hospitals.
To make their hospital even more notarized.
Right. Mm-hmm. Clearly, they don't want to be funny. They want to be factual, but clearly there are all these hurdles that are hindering them from getting that status. And you start seeing that build up between all the pairs. And then I feel, because, like, I haven't watched all of them yet, but I actually feel there's going to be a big twist where eventually they're all going to be in the same hospital. And they're all going to have to work together. So it's going to be
that even would be hysterical.
Where maybe we'll start getting doctor and doctor pairs and not just doctor and nurse. And we're going to see interactions between all the doctor types that they've given us and all the nurse types that they've given us. So it's pretty hilarious. And you can learn a thing or two about some things that might be ailing you, like erectile dysfunction or diabetes. Or I think they did one about feet. And I did not get that one. I had to go back and go, I'm like, I still don't get it. But those are out there for you. But that's really all I've been... that's really the newest thing that I've watched, really.
Well, kind of. Then, it's time for Destiny. See how good I've been?
I've waited till the end of the show.
I didn't run through my anime thing real fast so I would have more Destiny time. Oh.
I just don't know what more you could possibly have to say about
this. Well, let me tell you about it, because How's the Wolves dropped...
I'm sitting because I'm contractually obligated to listen.
You are. And here's the thing, though, Panda. I think that you actually will really enjoy jumping back into Destiny when I make you jump back into it this weekend. So there's that. Because that. So let's talk about it. I had mentioned a couple of things that they had fixed. You know, the upgrade for exotics, which was a big piece. Because the way that they put exotic upgrades in for the first DLC, the Crota DLC, really fucked up a lot of things. If you had an exotic and you wanted the more powerful version, you basically had to buy the more powerful version using your existing one plus 7,000 bucks, basically, in the game. And if you had completely boosted the weapon, you were starting over from scratch and you're going to have to re-completely boost it. So all the shards that you spent, all the energy that you spent on it, all for nothing because you now had this weapon back at zero, which was basically barely as powerful as when you had your previous version boosted. There were a lot of people that hated that system because every week Xur was the one that had the exotics ready for upgrade, and he didn't always have all exotics. They cycled. So you were always checking to see, well, is this the week that you have the last word so I can give you $7,000 and my copy of it to get one that's less powerful than what I have right now that could potentially be more powerful? It was stupid. And that's one of the things that they fixed in the new DLC. The House of Wolves line, one, actually has a story. A real story. That when you run all the story missions, you can actually recount the whole reason why you jumped into it, what you are trying to do, and it has a conclusion to the story. Huh. For the missions that run into it. There are additional bounties that come, and they're constantly replenished by Petra, who is out in the Reef social station. And so you can constantly be hunting down additional bounties than the ones that you get on Earth. And so the bounties that Petra has are all about exploring basically Venus, Mars, and Earth for these bad guys that you want to wipe out from the House of Wolves. They're always basically ultras or majors from the fallen houses, and they run in waves. So they're specialty special events. You don't get special event like medals for them, but they are instances where you have four waves of baddies that you can try to survive either solo or with groups that are around you, but they are treated like public events. So you can basically just go into the spots where you know that they're going to spawn and wait. And if there are eight people in the area when this event drops, then all eight of you can go after these waves, which when you have more than four people on a wave, it makes it so much easier to blow them apart. Doesn't even matter if like anybody in your wave is below 30. When you have more than four people, you're going to kill all the waves. If you defeat all the waves, one, you get the bounty piece for it. So you get XP, there's a potential weapon drop or material drops for turning in these bounties, but you also get what is called an ether key. And basically, it's a timer. There's a special chest that appears if you're able to defeat all the waves and not die during the waves. Mm-hmm. Or if you die, be revived by somebody who's fighting in the wave. If you die and you're not revived, you don't get the ether key. If you die and you are revived, you do get the ether key.
Oh, that's nice.
And then you get a countdown on finding the special chest. So it's a big chest, and usually you have like a minute to find it. And so basically it then becomes a scavenger hunt because it's somewhere on the level where you are. So a lot of people will look to the Titan or to the Warlock in their group to jump up because they have the highest vertical jump to scout around to try and see where the chest is, because there's a gold light that shows on the chest, and then everybody makes a mad dash to get to that chest, because if the timer runs out before you get there, you don't get any of the elements that are in the chest.
Boo.
The chest, however, does contain a bunch of things. I've actually gotten a legendary weapon out of one. It usually will contain ammo of some kind. Sometimes it has multi-packs of heavy. Sometimes it has multi-packs of special. It usually has a big multi-pack of some kind of material. So you usually always get material, a weapon, and then some bonus something or other. I've picked up two legendary weapons in total from these chests, from doing these bounties since the game DLC dropped on Tuesday on the 19th. So the legendary drops are much better.
Okay. What do we have to look forward to in terms of gear? Because, you know, with the new expansion, I'd imagine that there's some new awesome gear that everyone's going to be fighting to get.
Big, big chunk of new gear, both on the weapon side as well as on the armor side. So on the Reef, there is a new salesman. And basically, in order to buy that gear, which usually consists of an arm piece, so gauntlets, and I think he has one chest, but not full armor yet. And I believe it's going to cycle and refresh just like everyone else's stock. You have to earn favor. So basically, he's a faction, very much like the Crucible Quartermaster on Earth. You have to run the Prison of Elders missions, which are basically arenas. So it's like a mini Crucible. Instead of playing against other players, however, they're all arena types. So you have 5 to 6 battles that you run through that have different modifiers on them that you run in teams of 3. If you complete all the waves, then you earn favor, you also earn weapons, and you also earn elements that let you level up all of the new gear and new weapons in the new pieces.
So it's horde mode.
Basically, it's horde mode. And it's horde mode that you can pick up and leave and come back to where you left off at any point in time.
Oh, that's nice.
So you can run, the first piece is the Prison of Elders, which you can only get to once you've completed the entire story mode for the wolves, which I will say the missions are definitely difficult. The level cap is raised, so you can go to 34. With the new DLC. And the thing is, you can get to 33 if you have a 32 character really quickly. Basically, all of your gear that you have that got you to 32 stays where it is and can be ascended. So it's not all new gear that you have to build up. So if you got any gear from Crota's raid and that's all leveled up, that stays where it is. You get an additional mark that says ascend. And the only thing that you need to ascend gear, as far as what your armor is wearing, is exotic shards. So this is where your special coins come in when Xur is in. So you can just buy a bunch of them because you can ascend all those pieces. Once you've ascended those pieces that you have that require ascend, you'll be at 33 and like a half. If you have any of the pieces of gear before Crota's, you need etheric light, which is something that you can earn by running Prisons of Elders multiple times.
Okay.
Prison of Elders basically functions like the weekly heroic. You can run it once and get gear, and then if you run it again, you're not going to get any of the gear. You'll just get the XP for it until it resets on Tuesday. But it's six or seven, I lost my count, different arenas that you play through with different baddies, and there are a bunch of challenges that pop up. There are special people that you have to kill within a timer, all working with your party of 3. You complete all of it. You get all the great stuff. You earn favor with the new salesman, Varric. And Varric has new ships. Varric has new cloaks. Varric has new weapons. Varric has new gear. So there's that set. In addition to the Prison of Elders, then there are 3 additional arenas that you can go into, again, with teams of 3, where you're taking on more arena battles, and ultimately, like, Varys Tark is one guy, and then there are 2 new people that you can take on. The first piece, Prison of Elders, and the arena to take on Varys Tark are level 32. The other 2 start at level 34, and I think the final one actually starts at level 35. So you have to really be boosted up before you can get that final one, like, pegged off. And that's just House of Wolves story and bounty and Prison of Elders. Additionally, you also have the Trials of Osiris, which are structured crucible matches, basically. So there's much more for PvE to do outside of just running into the crucible with a shotgun. Shotguns have also been nerfed in Crucible because a lot of people were getting pissed that if you had a Titan that was 32 and a shotgun, there was no way that you were winning against them. Didn't matter what you had. Didn't matter if you had Iron Banner gear.
They could either shoot you with the shotgun or punch you.
Exactly. And so people were like, Titans are way OP in PvE, and that's why we're not playing it. So that's now been nerfed and balanced. So PvE on Crucible is much, much more balanced, and actually someone like me can almost kind of sort of hold a chance. But only kind of, sort of. Trials of Osiris, basically, it's a 9-match run, and you get credit for every win and every loss. And basically, it's 3-on-3, best of 9, or whoever loses 3 first is out.
Okay.
And as you compete through Trials of Osiris, you earn gear. So I actually have a friend in my guild who ran Trials of Osiris. It just opened up on Friday.
In your guild?
I said guild, didn't I? Yeah, in my... Not in my guild.
In your clan?
In my clan. Wow. Oh, wow.
Wow.
In my clan, guild, clan guild, same thing, in my clan, who ran it as soon as it popped up on Friday. So, like, Zurit popped up like a new piece. And he has already done a straight 9-0 cleanse streak. So he got all the gear, the new gear. So he got the headpiece, he got a chest and feet. And as of the taping of this podcast, which is within 24 hours of that happening, has leveled all the pieces. So he's ascended. He's got a level 34 Titan already.
Holy crap.
That dude doesn't play. And I was like, you should run it with me. And I was like, yeah, I suck at PvE. He's like, I'll still run it with you, though. And I'm like, oh, thank you. I might have a shot at a chest. The Trials of Osiris stuff is really very interesting because, you know, I think unlike straight up Crucible, level advantages do count. There are tweaks and perks that happen on each of the levels. And so you really need to have a good team. You need to have communication to make it work. And there are favors that you can get and buy from a Trials of Osiris salesman that's on the reef. So you can basically earn pieces that allow you to have like your first loss forgiven, or for you to start the trials already with a win in your pocket. Or there's even a buff that you can get that if you win one, it'll count as two to help you get to your 9. So I think that that's very interesting because if you have the right buff and you put together the right team, getting close to winning that 9 and getting all that gear, which most of the gear is all gold, so it is gorgeous looking. Destiny now just feels fucking huge. Like, before you would jump into the game and you're just like, all right, I gotta run strikes because I need to get a bunch of Vanguard marks because I need to get this weapon. So I'm just gonna run the same Devil's Lair strike over and over and over again because I know I can solo it. And so I'm just gonna spend an hour in that strike. And, like, it took all the fun out of it because it didn't feel really big. You were either running the daily, weekly, and the nightfall, and then doing strike playlists till you weren't getting credit anymore. And then if it was the weekend, buying a couple things from Xur and doing a couple of raid runs so you could level up some weapons and you were out. Well, now Destiny feels much bigger because Xur bounces between the Earth and the Reef now. So you're not always going to find Xur in the same 5 places. And we only know of one place right now that you'll find him on the Reef. So Lord knows if that's going to be his permanent place or if he's going to bounce around the Reef in other places. You've got Trials of Osiris. You've got the Prison of Elders. You have the whole story that you can run through for the wolves. Then you have the additional bounties that you can do between bounties for the Queen and then bounties for yourself, not to mention existing Crucible. So it just feels so much bigger now. I think basically if this is how Destiny had come out when it first came back out in October, you wouldn't have had Kotaku and Polygon shitting all over it. Like, I've been watching because I knew that they were going to eat crow. I knew they were going to eat crow with wolves just from some of the dev cons that the Bungie team has had and pieces that they've put out on things that they were addressing. You know, you don't have that exchange anymore for exotics. Everything can be ascended. The gunsmith can now resmith weapons. When you resmith a weapon, however, its progression is reset back to 0. So it's really best for when you get a weapon that could go to the weaponsmith to take a look at what it maxes out at and figure out if that's useful to you or not before you start to level it, because that's the time that you want to smith it before you start to level it, because you lose all that leveling process when you resmith a gun. So a big chunk of guns are resmithable, which is awesome on the legendary side and exotics. And RNGesus has been addressed because, like I said, since House of Wolves dropped on the 19th, I've gotten 2 legendary drops, which, as you know, RNGesus hates me.
Right.
So I would do Crota and all I would get would be fucking shards.
And not even energy.
And I got like 2 weapons. No, let me not lie. I got 3 weapons out of running Crota's raid, both on normal and hard, a total of, I want to say that I've done that raid at least 12 times. I've only gotten 3 weapons. The machine gun, the pulse rifle, and a fusion rifle. For Crota. I still haven't even gotten Crota's Reign, which I have Ideon's Alley, and I will never be able to rank it up because Lord knows it will never be a Necrochasm because RNGesus doesn't love me like that. But it feels so much bigger, and in looking at like after House of Wolves have dropped, if you hit up Kotaku right now or Polygon, they're all like, oh my god, Destiny finally feels big and it's really great. This is what it should have been all along. And now I'm really excited to be in it. And I'm like, man, there's a lot of people that's been excited to be in it for a while, but it does. It feels much bigger and you don't have to run the same raids, the same strikes all the time in the same order in order to get the weapons that you want or the materials that you need. You can now do exchanges for materials at the speaker. So if you have a shit ton of radiant energy and you need a shit ton of radiant shards, you can change in that radiant energy direct into shards at the speaker. So you can very quickly be like, oh, I don't have to run the raid on all of my alts for 2 weeks in a row before I'll be able to finally level up one of my characters, the 32. I can literally trade in these 28 radiant energies that I didn't need that were just sitting here and get 28 shards and take my Titan from 30 to 31 and a half. Boom, done. So it really does allow you between being able to exchange Vanguard marks for materials and then take those materials either to Eris Morn or to the speaker and change those in for other ones that you need. It really allows you to not have to sit and grind through the same thing over and over again and the same cutscenes over and over again to build up. You can really go at it in a diverse way. The weekly heroic and the nightfall are no longer tethered. So all of the strikes, the weekly ones, the daily, weekly, and nightly are all different. So you're not going to have to run the same strike twice in a week in order to get some great materials and just run one on super hard. It doesn't work that way. So like this week, the weekly is going after the Archon Priest. The Nightfall is Omnigul, and like the daily is Devil's Lair or something like that. So they're not paired anymore. So okay. Those people who like to run through those guys, you won't have to do the same things over again. So a lot of the tediousness that a lot of people were feeling when they hit the wall a couple of months ago is all gone. There's no tedium. Like, you can jump in and...
tedium. There's no tedium.
There's no tediousness. That's actually the word. But there's no tediousness now.
I like tedium, though. Tedium is now going to be the new thing to say.
So at this point, as you know, Panda, my hunter, which is the lead heavy character that I have, had mostly still blue weapons. I'm rocking nothing but legendaries and exotics at this point on my hunter. I already have one piece of new gear, gauntlets, that I got as a drop, which was amazing. One of my legendary drops that I had. I also got an exotic drop out of Prison of Elders.
Okay.
Unfortunately, it was No Man's Land, so it was the sniper rifle that you can equip as a primary. It's the slow loading until you beef it up.
Right.
And I also got a Truth rocket launcher, which is an exotic, as a drop. So I'm feeling very good about all the new things that are going on. I actually, when I turn on Destiny and I grab my character, I don't really know when I start off where I'm going. I don't know if I'm doing Osiris tiles. I don't know if I'm going to do more bounties for the queen or bounties for myself, what weapons I'm going to be focused on building and that kind of thing. So it's a really good time to jump into Destiny, especially if you haven't yet. Like, this is the perfect time to grab the game, grab both DLC packs. It's going to feel very, very big. And it's going to allow people to really blaze through the 20s to the 30s because there's so many different ways that you can get there now. There's not just the one path. It's not just run Vault of Glass Man twice and run Crotus three times on all your alts. There's so many different paths that you can take. So it's actually interesting again, you know, and keep in mind that there's more to come. There's still the big, big update that'll be out in the fall that will have another raid with it. So much more to come. And the missions are really great. There's one of the missions in House of Wolves where you basically have to walk through the start of Vault of Glass to complete it. And it was really funny because I'm like, oh, I've never done Vault of Glass by myself. I hope I remember the path down. I'm like, wait, this seems so much brighter than before. But you have to take out oracles and all that kind of stuff. It's good. Bungie has really done a great job with this DLC. Everything they fucked up with Crota, they fixed with House of Wolves.
So how do you really feel?
I mean, it's all right.
That's what I thought. That's the show.
But no, really, like, I'm enjoying playing with people again. And the thing I think that's most interesting is because the PvE stuff and the hunting of, like, the wolves and whatnot are all really community-based, it's really driving more people to, when they're in the social spaces, try to pair up. Like, basically people right now, especially anyone who's, like, just 30 or 31, is using the social space and, like, camping out there to use it for LFG, for looking for game. Big time, so that they can run those bounties with people because they know that they need some strong players. Right. And I think that's really what they wanted those social spaces to be, which is why they allowed 12 and 16 people to be in them at times, depending upon what your server was doing, to really be a place for you to not only drop stuff off at your vault, but to find some other high-level players to invite to a game to like, then jump in for those bounties.
Help me.
Exactly. And so instead of having to go to the Destiny LFG website, you can now basically just sit in the reef in the social space, because anybody going to the reef is more than likely a level 30 or better at this point, and they're going after those bounties or they're going to the Prison of Elders. Like, I can't tell you, I had 15 people invite me to a game on Thursday because I was on my hunter, and they were like, "Ooh, you're a 32 and you have Crota stuff. Play with me."
Well,
like, literally somebody,
see, you don't need me.
Yeah, like, no, I do. No, I do. So get
no,
on it.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
no,
I do.
Don't.
Yeah, I do.
You're good.
No, I'm not. Yeah. You're getting on Destiny, so it's not. Remember, anyway. Let's Douchey 2015. So you owe me. Just saying, because we had a couple of Destiny.
I know.
And
I
you
know.
Blew me off.
Okay.
So
okay.
I will collect.
I know you will. Just like all the people who call my phone.
Bitch better have my money.
You.
And by money, I mean Destiny.
With that.
So that's what I got. Like, House of Wolves is good. Great job, Team Bungie. If you've fallen off the Destiny wagon, if you bought the DLC or you bought the initial downloadable that came with the DLC packs already, definitely fire up your Destiny and do the update. It's worth a once around for sure. The story for House of Wolves actually isn't bad. And your sidekick, you know, Eris Morn was kind of, like, weird when you were running through all the Crota stuff, because she was just really, like a bad ex-girlfriend.
Yes, I have a theory with the Biffle about her being a scorned lover of Crota, which is why she wants the spleen of Crota and the heart of Crota and his eyes, and she wants to key the car of Crota and burn the mixed
burn, of Crota. Burn the clothes of Crota.
Yeah, like, she just wants everything of Crota to be destroyed,
but
and she wants to talk about it all the time.
But Petra, who is basically the voice in your head, along with Varix, is really quite funny, actually, as you run along. Like, as you start missing, she was like, "Last week I was delivering mail to the things, and now I'm delivering destruction. It's a good week." Like, literally, I'm not exactly word for word, but that's basically, like, the opening line when you first start running your first mission. So she is actually a funny character, and, like, really has some great jokes as you're running along. I think she's like, "Last week I was delivering letters, and this week I'm delivering destruction." You know, like, it's really, it's good. They really nailed it. Like,
you sound very pleased.
I am. It's fun. Destiny is fun again. It's not a grind. Like, before, I'd be, like, leaving work and be like, "All right, I gotta go put in some work because I gotta run Crota at least twice on normal with my Warlock and my Titan, because I'm gonna get those shards and I need those shards. I'm probably gonna get the fucking chest again, but I'm going to dismantle that so I can get those shards on top of it, because then I'm only a week away from having a level 31 Titan." Like, it was work. And now it's just like, oh my god, I'm gonna jump in, I'm gonna see who's on, and let's go run something. Like, it's so much more exciting right now because there's just more depth, there's more things to do, and they're fun. So great job by the Bungie team, and it's fun to see people excited about playing Destiny again, because it really is a very good game. Like, it's fun.
And it's fun, just like we are here at Esh.
Exactly. And we have so much Esh going on. It's like ridiculous. So make sure that you check out all the things we write on our website, www.egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. That's where you're going to find a big chunk of our AAA, big pieces over there. You will find all of our indie coverage, comics, nerdery, general fun stuff, and just things that we're talking about on our home website, electricsisterhood.com. You'll also find our podcast there, as well as in the iTunes store, either on your desktop application or on the podcast application on your iOS device by searching for the Eshcast and subscribing. You'll also find our podcast over at Vogue Network, as well as some other great geeky shows. And you'll find us on Stitcher. So pretty much, if you're searching the web for podcasts, you'll find Esh wherever you're looking. So subscribe and make sure that you get our podcasts the moment that we put them out every week. If you're checking out our show, then we highly, highly recommend that you check out the other shows that are part of our little family of geekery. Starting with No Borders, No Race. If it's indie in any way, just cool or just fun, then KBD is talking about it on No Borders, No Race. K-pop, J-pop, manga, anime, movies, theater, just there's nothing that is off limits for KBD. So make sure that you check out No Borders, No Race. It is also in iTunes, and you can find it at b3crew.com. If you need beats for your feet, if you're doing the workouts and you're just into EDM, trap, house, and all that good stuff, then make sure that you check out geekagro.com and the playlist put together by our homeboy Deuces Wild. On Thursdays, if you've got issues,
he's got issues,
y'all can have issues together. The Issues Guy Issues program, call in live and be part of his wrap-up shows. And let me tell you, if you are watching Game of Thrones and you love the Game of Thrones, then you're gonna love the Issues Guy and his wrap-ups on Game of Thrones. Also Walking Dead, all kinds of stuff. Make sure that you're checking out Issues program. And coming to the family really soon, July will be here faster than you know, people. The Structure Network joining the Esh family of publications. So for all the things that we talk about, that stuff, plus comics, music, additional nerdery, craziness, the team, oh my god, I can't even wait till the announcement happens. You are going to be so surprised. The Structure family is so strong, it's ridiculous. We are unbelievably excited to have them be part of our family. So make sure that you're keeping your eyes peeled for when the Structure Network goes live. It's going down. The grid is almost live, people. So make sure that you're a part of it, because it's awesome. It's so awesome. The future's so bright. Not only do I have to wear shades, I need, like, light dampening drapes in my house because the future is so bright. It's, like, so bright.
Is that the shit you dig this week?
I mean, really, let me not lie. The shit I'm digging this week is fucking Destiny. I can't even.
Okay.
I just can't. My even is like, I can't. No, don't make me. So yeah, no, Destiny, I'm loving it. When I finish up here, I'm going to be back in it. So,
oh, well then, good to know. There we
go. Yeah. So don't pretend like you're not on your PlayStation.
I'm not.
Mm-hmm. I see you lurking on the Crunchyroll. Ignoring my text message.
No.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So that is the shit I'm digging. What are you digging this week, Panda?
Shorts.
Yeah.
That fit on my booty.
Can I also add ice cream to my shit that I'm digging?
To my shorts? No thanks.
No, to the shit that I'm digging. Destiny and ice cream.
Okay. Sounds like a great combination to me.
It really actually is. It is. So as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time, guys.
Peace.
Deuces.